This is real news. Where is it? I'm Peter Laufer, co-director of the University of Oregon UNESCO Crossings Institute. Joining us here on Real News is School of Journalism and Communication Professor Holly Smith, who specializes in science and environmental communication. And Holly, when we look at news in terms of misinformation, disinformation, propaganda, and misunderstanding, certainly science and environmental communication is right in there in the mix. And here we are working at the University of Oregon, and we are in the middle of fires and deadly heat and drought. So can you help us understand how to communicate science information at a time when there are those who, for whatever their reasons are, political, religious, ignorance, disinterest, are saying baloney?
Yeah, so thanks, Peter, for having me on today for this conversation. We are in a really interesting moment where we're seeing the effects of climate change today. I think there used to be this idea that climate change was something that the next generation and the generation after that, that it was going to be their problem. But really thinking about in here in Oregon, we just had record-breaking heat waves, right? And thinking about the fire season of 2020 and 2021, this is really becoming a reality that we have to deal with today. It's not something that we can think about in the far off future.
And it's a reality that has immediate effects. People are dying. This is not just conceptual, as you say, off into the future. This is something that is hitting this state and this region hard.
Yeah, absolutely. Heat waves are one of the deadliest forms of extreme weather events. And as climate change continues to worsen and our summers become longer and heat waves become hotter and more frequent, then this is going to be something that we're going to be seeing way more often.
So how do we communicate this successfully as real news to a skeptical public or a disinterested public or a denying public?
Well, I think the first step is really understanding the audience. So I think to be an effective communicator, you have to understand who you're communicating to or communicating with, I think is a better way to think about it. So right now, research has shown that the number one driver of climate change attitudes or the number one predictor of climate change attitudes is political affiliation and political ideology. So really thinking that we have this huge political divide that is particularly apparent in the United States. So you can see this in trends globally, but it is really apparent in the United States that people who are identifying as left-leaning ideology or maybe more democratic or right-leaning ideology, we have very different ideas. They're very different ideas and acceptance about climate change. So number one is really understanding who your audience is, what do they believe? And then you can go in and you can really thinking about having conversations, understanding where those people are coming from, right? Because research has shown, and this is really interesting, research has shown that if an argument is going to threaten somebody's worldview or their idea of their identity, right, then we're less likely to believe a counter argument about that. So that's really important to understand.
Like, so how would you approach that? If you were speaking with somebody who said baloney, not true, propaganda, what do you do? How do you work to bring them to the facts?
So I think the first thing is listen. So my first question whenever I'm having a conversation with somebody is tell me why do you think that way? Tell me where that stems from, or where did you hear that? And so I'm really interested in learning how those beliefs came to be. And then you can find points of entry for having a conversation. And one is acknowledging that their worldview is real and valid. And so not basically thinking about talking down to anyone, because
not using that term I've used twice now, baloney, right?
Well, I think that anytime somebody confronts us in that way, it feels very confrontational rather than let's have a conversation about this. And we saw this a lot with COVID, right? So with COVID, I think that there was a lot of demonization about people's worldviews because of the effects of COVID and because of the severity of the situation and the need to act quickly. It's the same with climate change. But there is that demonization of the other, the demonization of somebody else's worldview. And that's not a very effective technique, right?
So have you put this into practice and made it work? Did you go to a cafe and sit down with a climate change denier and have a cup of coffee without throwing your coffee at him or her?
Well, I mean, I am from a very conservative place. I'm from a small town in Utah that is very, very conservative. And I have these conversations all the time with my personal circle of community from where I'm from and a lot of people that I know. And so these conversations are ongoing. I think that they're not something that you can expect to go have one conversation with someone and completely change the worldview, right? But having these conversations, understand where people are coming from, talking about the effects of climate change. And I think that the extreme weather events and the immediacy of the effects that we're experiencing now are wonderful windows of opportunity to engage people, right? Because when we're experiencing it, when we have heat waves, when we see that we can't cool down, we don't have air conditioning in our house, then those are moments where people might be a little bit more open to having conversations about that.
So how do these conversations, these one-on-one kinds of conversations that you have in your crossroads town in Utah, how does that translate to mass news media? How does mass news media communicate to an audience that is rejection oriented?
So I think the news media have a very important role to play, and it's something that we don't talk about enough. So I think in particular with climate change, there's been studies that have shown this idea of false balance. So with climate change, there is a 90 to 100% agreement among climate scientists. The most common number is 97% of climate scientists believe that climate change is happening and that it's human caused. Right? So there is scientific consensus that it's happening and that it's human caused. But when you look at media coverage, we have this journalistic norm that has been taught in journalism schools for decades, that for every side of a story, there's an opposite side, and that you have to have this balanced perspective, right? What one side says, then you have to provide the alternate viewpoint for that. Well, that's really problematic when 97% of climate scientists agree. We have consensus, right? So what should be showing up in media coverage, if it's actually accurate, is 97% of coverage is talking about the reality of climate change. And 3%, you know, if that, should be talking about the alternate viewpoint. So I think that there has to be some sense of scientific literacy among the journalistic community, and then understanding who you're putting on and whose voices you're amplifying through your coverage.
And this kind of balance already doesn't exist. If it's raining, the weatherman does not give an alternative point of view for those who believe that in fact the sun is shining and it's a dry day. There are any number of examples in journalism where we do not seek this kind of false balance.
Exactly. And the other thing I think about here too, you see this a lot on network news where they'll put up two people who are experts, right? Experts, and they provide opinions on a specific topic such as climate change. And you see this idea of fake experts. That is a really big tool and technique of misinformation campaigns, is somebody who may be an expert in something. Just because somebody has a PhD, that does not mean that they are an expert in climate science, right? So that they are a scientist in one domain, that does not necessarily transfer.
But so once again, the ultimate onus is on an educated news consumer figuring out what's being presented, how and why and then coming to conclusions about whether it's raining or not by looking out the window and figuring out what this information or misinformation or disinformation or propaganda was all about. So one more question, which is maybe the toughest one while we have you here at Real News, is how in general can we communicate science, complicated science that requires this PhD you're talking about and years of practice to work on some specialty to an audience that has no reason to be able to digest this material but needs to know it? What kinds of tools are there that you're teaching, that you use to take these complexities and make them digestible?
I think the biggest thing is cutting it down to the core message. What is the most important thing? And yes, there is always going to be nuance. There's always going to be certain levels of uncertainty because science inherently is probabilistic, right? So really thinking, what are the core messages here? And then also providing specific actions that people can take if they want to learn more, and also connecting it to their daily lives. So that's the biggest thing I see with climate change. Like, and going back to our conversation about journalistic coverage, I think every journalist covering the heat waves should say climate change is making this worse. And because of climate change, you can expect to see more of this in your daily life, right? So really connecting it to people and making those messages really simple, it just in terms of what are the core things that people need to know. They don't have to read everything, you know, and scientists need to do a lot better job at communicating and having these conversations and being approachable and thinking about engaging with people in different ways.
Yeah, the onus, just as it's on the consumer, if the scientist wants to communicate the message, the onus is on the scientist to learn from colleagues such as you how to get out of the lab and talk to the public, right?
Absolutely. And that's something that we're seeing a huge push for across the board from scientific organizations, scientific institutions and funding bodies. There is this push for an idea of engagement, and that's absolutely what we need to see. We need to be having these conversations. We need to be willing to engage. We need to think about communication and audience outside of the academy.
University of Oregon School of Journalism and Communication Professor Holly Smith, specializing in science and environmental communication. Thank you so much for joining us on Real News.
Thank you, Peter.
You've been listening to Real News. Where is it? I'm Peter Laufer, co-director of the University of Oregon UNESCO Crossings Institute. Join us again for more on Real News.